And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John, you're right.
Right. I'm just going to play us in a little bit.
When are you going to tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome.
During every show. It's the most annoying. I just put him on the air now. I'm like, are you going to call me?
That's actually not a bad idea.
Teach a lesson.
Yep. Disturbed. Yeah, so thanks for having me, man.
No, man. Like,
this is, I got a chance to look at the, I checked out the website.
Oh.
And, you know, the Lifted.
The Lifted Project?
Yeah, the Lifted Project. That was awesome.
Oh, thanks, man.
That was amazing.
What are you doing? Pronounce your first name, because I'm going to fuck it up. Jairus. I was Jairus for the whole week. I'm like, it's got to be Jairus. Sorry. Jairus Cook.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming in, man.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
What are you doing April 6th?
I mean, that's so far away in the future. I have no idea.
Let's commit.
Okay.
You want to do the Lifted Project?
You know what? Let me double check my calendar, because just in case I don't have any contractual obligations, I just want to make sure April 6th. What time?
It's from like noon to 3.
You know what? Can I get back to you?
Because you can always get back to me.
I do have a gig, but it's a gig that I play pretty regularly, and I'm pretty sure I might be able to
move around.
Yeah,
because I would love to have you. Okay. This time we're doing so Lifted. Thank you for bringing up Lifted Project. I pitch it whenever I can. So last time it was just like We Are the World.
Which was the vibe, like that vibe was so awesome to me. I was like, man, I'd love to do this. Like,
I can't wait to have you.
Yeah.
So no, but what we did is I wrote the song,
mm-hmm.
and but we'd never rehearsed it. So the show was, because We Are the World, they didn't rehearse. Mm. So I sent out, I hate the sound of my own voice. And so to record the demo, because it's a choir piece,
right?
I got to record my own voice, like layer upon layer upon layer. So it's a choir of John Burton. My fucking eyes were bleeding. And so I send it out. So everybody said yes. So I send out the song, right? But there was no rehearsal. The band rehearsed the week before just to go through the song. And so we got there, and the first time we did it.
Uh-huh.
It's a story. It was inspired by my wife's cancer journey.
Man, that's a beautiful tribute.
Oh, man. Thanks, man. She had head and neck cancer.
Wow.
And do you want to hear the whole freaking story?
Yeah, of course. Okay. Why not? Yeah.
Welcome to me interviewing me.
Yeah. No. It's all good.
So my wife gets head and neck cancer, right? And it's serious. She gets an inch and a half tumor in her cheek, and it spreads to her lymph nodes down in her neck. And she goes through this hell treatment. It's surgery, and it's chemo, and it's radiation. And then they spit you out, and, like, she couldn't walk, she couldn't talk, she couldn't eat. Her face was literally ashed. Like, every day the pillow would be ashed from burning. So first I get her to – so she's sitting at home for, like, a month and, like, literally can't do anything except get in a chair, get out of a chair. And I'm like, this isn't going right.
Mm-hmm.
So I take her it's January. It's like the end of January now.
Mm-hmm.
Bright blue sky, clear day, snow on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I take her out and try to get her out and put a winter coat on. And she can't get up with a winter coat on because it weighs too much. That's the shape she was in. So I put a blanket on her and she walks out and she tips her head a little bit. And, like four steps. And they're not steps, they're shuffles. And she tips her head a little bit and that usually means there's something wrong with her neck because it was all in her neck. And I see her like remembering the sun. She had been inside for like 6 months, didn't even know what the sun was. So we do 4 shuffles that day. 2 days later, we do 8 shuffles. A month later, we do 100 yards of shuffling.
Wow.
But it ends there. Like I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
So I have a friend who's a trainer at a gym and she teaches these classes, you know. And so one day I go to her, her name's Julie. So I go to her, I go, Julie, what happens if I bring Trish in here and I just put her in the back and she just shuffles and I'll just shuffle with her, but it'll get her out of the house.
Right.
Because she was also psychologically banged up because she thought she was disfigured. She kind of was. She thought she was disfigured.
That's
terrible. And she was bald up the back of her head, which is like a weird look to have hair on the front. And
yeah, but not on the back.
Right. So weird. So, and Trish used to go to this gym before the thing. My wife's name is Trish. So I go, so Julie says, yeah, bring her in. So I bring her in. And she got big sunglasses and a baseball cap and a scarf around her neck. She goes in the back, and she's shuffling in the class for like 30 seconds. Julie's like, F that. Julie goes, gets her, brings her up in the front of the class, spins around, and Julie, I'm going to cry. Julie shuffles with her for like the whole class.
Wow.
And it was amazing. And Trish is crying because she couldn't stand people watching. So we get in the car afterwards, and Trish, like, she still can't really talk that well, but she goes, could I come back? At the same time Trish is saying, can I come back? My phone's ringing and it's Julie. And Julie's like, get her back in here tomorrow.
Wow.
So we go back. And so she starts like little by little getting like a little bit more coordination. She had neuropathy because her head couldn't talk to her feet. Yeah. So little by little she gets like a little bit more. And now she can kind of walk. So one day, part of this class is box jumping where you jump on like this 2 foot
box. Yes, okay. I've seen that.
Oh, okay. So,
which I can't do.
I can't either. But yeah. So Julie brings out this like 3-inch step and says, Trish, you're going to start. But Trish can't do it. So she tries to jump up on the 3-inch step and she falls and she's crying. So Julie goes down. They go forehead to forehead for like 2 minutes. And I don't know what got said, but Trish gets up, wipes her eyes, and just starts working out again.
Wow.
At the end of that specific class, and there's people watching the whole thing, like there's a whole community. At the end of that class, Julie walks Trish over to this 2-foot box jump and says, we don't stop until you jump on this. They worked together every day for 3 months, strength building, crying, they just everything. And like there's a whole team now just watching Trish recuperate. So Trish gets to the point where she can lift her foot up on a 2-foot box.
Oh, my God.
But that's goodness. All she can do. She can do 1 foot at a time on a 2-foot box.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's experimenting with it one day. And Julie walks over to her. And this time I did hear it because I was so close. Julie looked at her and they go forehead to forehead again. And Julie goes, you can do this today. You are a feather. You can fly. You can do this today. Steps back. Whole class makes a circle around, and Trish is like wiping her eyes.
What?
Trish looks at me. I'm like, and Trish looks at Julie, and they trusted each other so much. She fucking flew up on the box.
What?
It devastated all of us for 15 minutes.
Oh my god!
Whole room's crying. And so what I got inspired was the idea of that transfer of energy of somebody believing in you and somebody. And building trust and building love. No money changes hands.
Yeah.
No agenda. Just one person believing in another person. And because that person believes in you, you do something you didn't think you could do.
That's
and you get lifted.
Insane. I love that.
Oh, thanks, man.
I love that story. Like, that's, first of all, that's such a beautiful tribute. Second of all, like, the fact that, first of all, I love how she motivated your wife, like with the forehead to forehead, because that's such a, like a visceral sort of
thing. They are, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, listen, like, dig deep, you can do this.
You can do this, and you can do it today. Like, stop effing around.
Man.
So we have the success, so I do what any good husband does after that. I start watching TV. And I'm watching the We Are the World documentary. And I'm like, dude, your show is like these amazing musicians. You could put a room full of musicians together. So why not do it? So then I thought, okay, but I don't want to be a fundraiser. Like, I'm everybody does fundraisers. Yeah, yeah. I just wanted it like an energy raiser.
I love that.
So we picked 4 nonprofit partners, and we're doing 4 again this year.
Uh-huh.
And we did that. We did the song, but it was like, so the first time, but there was no rehearsal. So, you know, the first time we did the song, my wife's sitting in the front seat, and I turn around, and she's looking at me like, are we going to have to move? Because that was bad. Because it was bad. God. But so we did it like 4 times rehearsal, and the audience watched us all rehearse, and, you know, that was the whole show. And then, we did it, and we had 4 nonprofit partners, and they had tables, and they were able to raise money.
That's insane.
So we did it. Yeah. So this year, if you can make it, please.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. I definitely want to be a part of that.
This year, there's a children's choir that's going to do a children's piece. that I'm writing with the children's choir. Then there's a, if you're interested, there's mm-hmm. a, because I've seen you play guitar, so I don't even have to ask if you're good. The we're doing a guitar symphony.
Okay. Oh, that's cool. Guitar symphony.
Yeah, there'll be like 18 acoustic guitars, and we'll all be playing a piece. And then we're doing an original song, and with the core choir, which you would be a part of. And then we're doing Won't Be Broken Again, core choir plus a back choir of 100 people.
Oh.
So, yeah. So if you could come and solo on the original the new song, I would love that.
I'm all in.
Beautiful, man. Beautiful. I'm all
in. Yeah, because when you first reached out to me, I got a chance to listen to the last podcast, I think you did.
Okay.
And
sorry.
Which No, it was awesome because, like, you know, I listened for as long as I could because after then, like, it was in the afternoon.
No, I know. Make sure you're home
and like stuff gets crazy. Yeah. So I couldn't give it the attention that I wanted to give it, but I loved it. And then you mentioned the Get Lifted project in your email. So I was like, let me see what this is about. And that was the first thing I thought about was We Are the World. Like,
yeah.
That sort of vibe. And I was like, man, like, this is such a beautiful tribute, and it's something that I've always wanted to be a part of, but also wanted to, like, create myself with, like, a bunch of musicians in my area as well, because there's such a, where I am, I'm in northern New Jersey, and, you know, it's mostly, like, farmland, and it's mostly, like,
horse country, right?
Yeah, horse country.
Yeah.
It's beautiful in the fall, but you wouldn't think that there was, like, a vibrant, rich music scene, and there is, like, you know, and when I started gigging professionally, like, I, you know, I all of a sudden I'm introduced to, like, this such a fertile, like, music scene.
Yeah.
So, you know, so the people is there. I just have to get myself organized.
Do a Lifted project out there, man.
Yeah. No, I would absolutely love to, but, you know, I think it's a good way to sort of transition to that, get my feet wet with you.
Do one here and then bring it there.
Yeah, and then, so, yeah.
Wait, I got a page on you because I got quite. You sold mattresses.
I did. I sold mattresses, yeah.
How somebody as talented as you selling mattresses? Why weren't you music from the get?
You know what? It's funny because when I was in high school, I was in this this quote unquote boy band.
Nice.
And we totally modeled ourselves after, like, so Boyz II Men was huge influence for me. So we modeled ourselves after Boyz II Men, and like we were the quintessential, like, you know, four-part harmony, like,
sweet
barbershop sort of quartet, you know, and we used to sing in the stairwell because they had good acoustics.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and we did a lot of Boyz II Men stuff. So, you know, so from, I would say from, like, my sophomore year of high school all the way up to my senior year, you know, we did that, and we sort of pursued it, and we made a couple records. Didn't release anything, just a lot of demos.
Right.
And we had a manager at the time, and
all right, that's...
Yeah, I mean, we took the steps in the direction, but it didn't pan out just because, as with most groups, you have different personalities. Some people want to go in one direction. Life happens. So, you know, this was, not to give away my age, but this was like late 90s, early 2000s. And then for 10 years, I did nothing.
Why?
And in those 10 years, that's when I sold mattresses. And yeah, you know what
just
it is?
Just to make money and live.
Yeah, just to make money and live. But for those 10 years, like, that's when I started, you know, like, you know, at the time, like, I got married. I had my first kid, you know. So it was like a lot of life-changing stuff that was that was happening. And, you know, so music, while it never sort of completely became devoid in my life, it definitely took a back seat.
Right.
So, you know, so once, you know, and I have three boys, by the way.
Congratulations, man.
Yeah, thank you. And my middle son, Lucian, just to give him a quick shout out today, is his 12th birthday. So
happy birthday, Lucian.
Yeah. So, but
how old is your oldest boy?
My oldest boy is 15, who plays bass guitar.
Actually. He plays bass?
Yeah, he plays bass.
My daughter's 16.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And I'm looking for her to have a musical influence.
Yeah. Listen, you know, connections all around. So,
there you go.
So once we start, once the family was complete, when my youngest was born, who's 9, his name is Caden. I would say about a year after he was born, I started to get that itch again.
Right.
And at the time I was selling mattresses. I was also selling, like, furniture. I worked for Ashley Furniture at the time.
Okay.
So, like, they do both. But at one point I was working at Sleepy's, and then I switched over to Ashley's, and I was doing that. And then I worked for another furniture company. And it was a time in my life where it was just like, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up, so to speak. And but all the while, you know, I was still singing. At that time, I wasn't playing guitar. I was, because I'm self-taught. I picked the guitar up in 2016. So right around that time is where, like, the itch started to...
You've only been playing since 2016?
2016.
We were friends until then. when did you reach the level you're at now? And if you say 2016, I'm shutting this whole thing down.
You know what? So I started in 2016, and I would say it probably took maybe a year and a half to get to the point where I was, where I felt like I could get in front of people and make it sound musical.
Is that why guitar? Because you wanted to get in front of people?
Yes, because at the, you know, because I've always been a vocalist, right. And I am really a vocalist first, and I. You know, and I used the guitar as a tool to sort of accompany myself.
Right.
And I knew people wouldn't hire me if I just showed up to a bar or a club or whatever. I was like, hey, can I sing some a cappella stuff?
Right.
That's not going to fly.
It does not fly.
Right. So.
Although it should.
Yeah, it should. It should. So so I felt like out of all the instruments that I could learn to play, guitar was like the most portable. Like I could take that places with me, specifically acoustic guitar. I thought about the piano and the keyboard, which I see some people doing, but they're big and bulky. And I was like, you know, a guitar is like, it's one of those things you could bring to a campfire. People don't bring pianos and keyboards to campfires.
Right.
So, you know, so that's, I sort of gravitated to that.
Okay.
And started teaching myself and, you know, and I, really, it, I guess it kind of started around a campfire with my son. And it was like... Yeah, I was like, man, it'd be cool if I could like lead the campfire. I can already sing. I think I'm a pretty good singer, but I need something else. So
the guitar sort of came in. But you play jazz guitar.
Not really jazz guitar.
They're pretty jazzy.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I do some jazzy chords and some bluesy stuff as well. But
and your right hand's good.
Yeah.
Your right hand's really good.
Thank you.
That's awesome. That's crazy. That's only been since 2016.
2016.
And you write.
All right,
dude.
Yep, definitely.
To hold you?
Yes.
Would you?
Yeah, of course.
Oh,
of
beautiful,
course.
Man.
Of course.
I'm yes, seriously on a to hold you kick right now.
So, funny story.
All right, what are you playing first? A guitar geek out for a second. What are you playing?
This is a Martin. This is a Triple O Junior.
Ooh.
And it's
that mic. That mic will pick. If you want to put that in front of your guitar, sweet, that'll
sweet,
yeah.
Sweet. I'm going to slide over.
Yeah, kick that out of the way. Okay. Nonsense.
So this is a Triple O Junior. It's Sepele. Is that how you pronounce it? Sepele.
Yep.
And I went with the Triple O size just because I do a lot of gigs, and you know, sitting for 2-3 hours doing these gigs, like
break your hand off.
Yeah, well, it came to be a lot on my shoulder because I started with a dreadnought.
Yeah,
so
man.
I got this, and you know, it's just more comfortable to play.
And you only play acoustic.
This is how I knew we were going to connect. Yeah, I only play acoustic.
This is how I knew we were going to connect. Yeah. I don't even think electric guitar is an instrument.
You know, it's a completely different instrument, and my son and I, we have like this argument, but it's just like he prefers electric guitar because he also plays that as well, and I prefer acoustic. But I'm a fan of portability.
Right.
If I could take it with me, like I can do a concert anywhere with this thing.
Totally.
Yeah.
And my argument is about electric guitar,
mm-hmm.
or why acoustic guitar is harder to play.
Mm-hmm.
Electric guitar, there's so much margin for error.
Yes.
If you're shredding or whatever, or you know, so much margin for, you make a mistake on an acoustic guitar, you're not hiding it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, there's no, because it's, you sort of lay bare your soul. So
yeah.
When you play acoustic guitar, which is.
Yeah. Okay.
It's stripped down.
Who's the greatest acoustic guitar player of all time?
And
you don't have to say me.
You know who I watched a lot when I was learning? Tommy Emmanuel.
Yeah, okay. I can see that.
And I actually saw him in concert not too long ago. But what really set me off was Prince. Prince is one of these like super underrated,
grotesquely underrated guitar player.
And I was just like,
did you ever see him do that tribute, My Guitar Gently Weeps?
No.
Oh my God.
When you get
out of here, you got it. It's on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's George Harrison, Eric Clapton, George Harrison, Eric Clapton's son, I think.
Uh-huh.
The guy from ELO.
Really?
And, yeah, and they're playing While My Guitar Gently Weeps as a tribute.
What?
And Tom Petty. And so they're playing it, and it's good. Prince comes out from behind a curtain and does a solo, and he starts going off. And they're literally laughing at each other. You can see Tom Petty laughing at George Harrison going, what are we even doing here?
Right, like we're not even on the same level.
Right, right. This, and you can see, and Prince is smiling because he knows. And
Wait a minute. Is this the one where after the solo he throws the guitar into the crowd?
I think
he was playing like either a Strat or a guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think I did see that.
And they're all laughing at each other like, what are we even doing here? Let's go home.
Actually, that's why I say I think he's super underrated because of that particular that clip that I saw.
Oh, he destroyed. Like, yeah.
He killed it.
There's a great Prince story when he played the Super Bowl. You mm-hmm. hear this story?
No.
So, you know, you're playing the Super Bowl. It's a big deal. And like, so there's months of prep and he's playing electric guitar. And morning of, his manager calls him and he goes, I got really bad news. And Prince is like, what? And he goes, it's going to rain. And Prince goes, I hope it fucking does.
Wow.
Yeah. How cool is that?
Prince is a badass.
He is a badass. He is, yeah.
He's
yeah,
just man. A badass. But yeah, so Prince is, you know, I would say if I had a guitar hero, like he would definitely be it.
Yeah.
I saw him do an acoustic version of his song Cream with this beautiful purple Taylor guitar. And the story behind the Taylor guitar was like he didn't want any branding on the headstock initially. So so Taylor made this, it kind of looked like an 8-14. Sort of looked like an A14, but it was like this deep, rich, beautiful purple.
Mm.
And of course, his outfit matches the guitar to a T, exquisitely.
Perfect.
And he cranks out this acoustic version of Cream that was like just creamy.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. It was amazing. It was amazing. So,
where did To Hold You come from?
So To Hold You actually came from, I wrote it for my mom way, way back in early 2000.
Yeah,
she was getting married and I thought it would be like a beautiful tribute because my mom, for the most part, like she raised me and my two brothers single-handed. I came from a single parent home. So once she found someone that she fell in love with and, you know, because she had gone through a divorce, not to air out my mom's laundry, but, you know, she went through divorce and then found someone else. And I thought, man, like this would be a fantastic tribute for her. So I wrote this song for her wedding and I played it at her wedding. And I remember writing it on like a Greyhound bus going into New York City.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, for something. And I wrote this song and it was like, and every time she comes to see me play a show, she always comes up those days. She's like, baby, can you play this? Can you play To Hold You for me? And I'm like, of course, Ma. I got you.
Oh, you're a good
man. It's your song. Yeah. So,
you're a good man.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Do you need to warm up or anything?
I just need to figure out what. No, I think I'm good. I might have to tune.
All right, maybe. Here.
Oh, so look at that. See? All prepared.
There you go, man.
All prepared.
Yeah. You're talking about playing dreadnoughts. So this my guitar is AN10, and it's like the only guitar I play.
Oh, but which is beautiful, by the way.
Thank you,
man. I love
it. But it's huge. It's like playing a Greyhound bus. And I'm like, I should experiment with other guitars. And every time I try, I'm like, I got to stay with my baby.
Yeah, you know what it is? I mean, I feel like, you know, the guitar is definitely an extension of you, especially if, you know, if it's been there for you for specific events, like if you wrote certain songs on it or like maybe it was your first guitar. Like, I think as guitarists, like we have like this visceral sort of like attachment.
To I have a theory.
What's the theory?
My theory is, so guitar makes noise by vibrating, right? Strings vibrate, wood vibrates, whole thing vibrates. You vibrate.
Yeah.
I vibrate. Oh. I think that when you put two vibrating things together, they create a distinct vibration of themselves. Two strings on a guitar vibrating together create a third
sound. That's true.
I think when you play a guitar enough, like this isn't my normal guitar, but my normal. It's an AN10 too.
Uh-huh.
When you play that enough,
mm-hmm.
it creates a sound that can't be created if you were to play it. Or if I was to play your Martin, it creates a sound that I couldn't do the same sound as you because it's two frequencies.
Interesting theory. I love that.
And I think you, and I think you inherently get attached to that particular vibration.
Yeah.
And that's why you love your guitar so much.
Interesting. That's, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Some people think I'm crazy, but
I think so. I think that's awesome. And especially like if, you know, if the frequency that you sort of give off complements the frequency of the instrument.
And like, that's why you like your guitar. Yeah. Because you're vibing with that frequency.
I love this. And you know, it's funny because like this guitar is one of my newer ones.
Yeah.
And I've only had this guitar maybe 4 months or 5 months, and I love it.
Already bought in. Yeah.
I love it. I mean, it's already broken out. I got some
nice
some wear.
Ding it up a little bit.
Yeah. Yep. I got some belt. Well, that's it. They call it a buckle rash on the back.
Definitely, man.
Yeah. That's what this is called.
Oh, can you play?
Yeah, of course.
Beautiful,
of course.
Man.
She flows through my vein. She captivates my mind. She lingers there like the center rain and cleanses me when my heart's in pain. And when she calls to me, I'm drawn to her, cause she casts a spell on my heavy heart. All I want to do is to hold you, squeeze you, guide you. In my arms, I want nothing more than to have you for my own. Don't you realize when I see you, crave you like no other man. I cherish you with my heart and soul, and I will never let you go. Embedding in all my dreams, she makes her presence known. And radiant as she won't be, and brightest among the stars. Believe me when I say, she makes it worth my while. And everything seems to turn out right. All I wanna do is hold you, squeeze you, guide you. In my arms, I want nothing more than to have you for my own. But don't you realize when I see you, crave you like no other man. I cherish you with my heart and soul, and I will never let you go. No way without her, won't go a day without her. She's the center of my soul. Her love makes me lose control. Now I feel that my life is incomplete. She is all that I need, all I need. To hold you, squeeze you, and guide you. In my arms, I want nothing more than to have you for my own. But don't you realize when I see you, I crave you like no other man. I cherish you with my heart and soul, and I will never let you go. And I will never let you go.
Man. Thank God that boy band didn't work out.
You know, it's funny because that song, I actually wrote it when I sang with the boy band. But again, like, it was one of those songs that we just separated. And I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to take this song with me.
Yeah.
Make it my own.
So, beautiful, man.
Thank you.
When you write, do you channel it? Do you create it? Or does the muse give it to you? What's your philosophy?
My philosophy is that it's sort of a combination of both. I will typically sit down and, you know, I might like try to put some chord combinations together, and if something speaks to me, then the lyrics sort of naturally sort of flow. And not only that, but the lyrical content and the subject matter of the song sort of, you know, it's not always apparent, but I always get a vibe where it's like, all right, this song needs to be, you know, maybe it's a song about longing, you know, maybe it's a song about, you know, being joyful about something, whatever it is. But typically the chords will give me sort of a story to sort of go along with it. And then at that point, it's just kind of like plug and play. It's like, all right, let me put some lyrics.
Have you ever written anything that you thought you didn't write? Have you written a line and gone, that was given to me.
Yeah. Like I was definitely influenced subconsciously by another artist
or another song or an angel.
Oh,
or you know.
Yes, that's 100% has happened.
Yeah, isn't that the craziest thing when you write something and then like you look at it later and you're like, that wasn't me.
Yeah.
I'm not that good.
Yeah, right. It's just like, wait a minute. I put that phrase together.
Yeah. Nah. Yep. Nah. I've had that same.
I think that was my grandmother or somebody, like the poet that lived.
I've had that same feeling. Yeah. I love that feeling.
Yeah.
I don't get it enough, but I love it.
I know. How often do you write? Because I try to write it. I try to write every day, but it doesn't.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So for a while, I was doing this one-man show,
mm-hmm.
and it was all about, because I had like a mental breakdown, and there's like a whole story behind that, and blah, 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 and lost my life. And so I wrote a one-man show about it. And so it was like that show is like 14 songs.
Mm.
So then I stopped writing for a while, and then I started writing. Then when I started this show, I started writing again, just to do it. And I wrote some stuff that I like.
Yeah.
But then it became like event writing. Like I had to write "Won't Be Broken" for the Lifted project. And when you start doing like event writing, It's a different.
It's a
very different deal.
It is very different.
I like it, but I don't like it.
Mm.
I like it because it's like fun to write for other people and hear what they do with it. But like you know, it has to be a certain genre. It has to be a certain you know. And there's a formula that you kind of have to follow.
Yes.
So I'm trying to break out of that.
Yeah.
But I don't. I wish I wrote daily, but I try to play daily. Do you play daily?
I do.
That's so good.
I do. Yeah, that I do play so daily, and you know, I typically gig between like you know 4 to 5 nights a week. So you know, just being out and playing gigs
right
full time, that's practice within itself.
But, yeah.
But when I'm sitting, like when I'm at home, like I'll sit and noodle, and you know, especially like my wife hates it, but like I keep a guitar next to the bedside.
Nice.
You know, and you know, so I'll pick it up every now and then, not every night. And you know, my wife's trying to read a book or whatever, and
right.
And while she loves to hear me play, sometimes she's
that must
like,
be nice.
Yeah.
I don't have that same situation at my house. Listener, fast forward 45 seconds because you've heard the story already. One day, I'm uh-huh. sitting on a stool and I'm writing a song, and my wife literally vacuums underneath me.
Listen, I mean, you know.
she'd lay down on railroad tracks for me in a heartbeat and has, but but it's so funny. Like when I play out,
uh-huh.
she comes and likes it.
That's awesome.
That's nice, but then I'm like, but wait a second. So
it's like a different person when I'm at home, just noodling. Like.
So we go to this fundraiser the other day,
uh-huh.
and there's this musician we know playing, and I'm like, we gotta go. We gotta pick up our daughter from work. I'm like, we gotta go. She goes, no. And I go, what do you mean? No. She goes, I want to hear somebody playing guitar. I'm like, I'm like, okay. I get it. Brutal, man. Brutal.
Wow. Yeah. Listen, you know, sometimes, I mean, my wife, she's actually not that bad. She's pretty good. But, you know, her thing is like she's trying to read a book. She's trying to like wind down. And here I come with like a guitar, like, you know. Working on half-baked songs that are like, you know, and I'm playing the same part over and over again.
Yeah.
Trying to get it right. And she's like, you have a music studio downstairs. Go use it. I'm like, wow.
That's baby. Nice, though, that you have a studio downstairs.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's not this grand thing, but, you know, it's just enough that, like, I've got guitars on the wall. I've got a couple banjos as well.
You play?
I don't play. I wish I could play, but the story with the banjos is that my father-in-law, his great-grandfather, I think, made banjos. Like,
oh wow,
yeah. In the early, I want to say 1900s. I might be getting the dates wrong, but he made banjos. So we have the two that we have two of the surviving banjos that he made.
Oh, that's
so,
kind of cool.
Yeah, so it's kind of a cool tribute to right. like. Sort of like the heritage of the family. So,
yeah.
But no, unfortunately, nobody plays. I've tried to play it, but.
I want to learn.
Yeah, me too.
I want to learn. Yeah. How many guitars you have?
Oh.
Here we go.
Oh, my goodness. you know, I'm actually not that bad. What is it? What do they call it? Guitar, what is it? Syndrome. What do they call it? Guitar, where a guitarist can never have too many guitars.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I forget
guitar
what they call it.
Acquisition syndrome.
Yeah, guitar acquisition syndrome. Yeah. I actually don't have that many. I think I have like maybe six or seven.
That's not off the charts.
Yeah, no, it's not. And that includes the one electric guitar that I have.
What for? Oh, for your son.
Yeah, all right, there you go. That's fair. So, and we sort of share. I mean, technically it's my guitar, but he plays it more than I do.
Right.
But I as far as like gigging guitars, like I have like two or three that I that I take out with me regularly. But I don't have that. How about you? How many do you have?
Well, so I only play the AN-10, right?
Uh huh.
So I had one for like 15 years.
That's
amazing. And yeah. And so then COVID happens and I was doing these Facebook lives just to play in front of people.
Yeah.
So some guy writes me and he goes, hey, I see you playing AN-10. And I talk about it. Like, it's the only guitar I can play. And he goes, I have one. I'm like, give me a number. Name a number. And I will. He goes, tell you what. I'm going to send it to you and you tell me what you think it's worth. So I'm like, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So he sends me the guitar. It's that one, actually. And when I got it, it hadn't been played at all. And they're rare. They're not expensive.
Yeah.
But they're really
just
rare.
Just hard to find.
Really hard to find. So I'm like, I call him up and I'm like, name your number, bro. Just tell. And he goes, you know what? You love it so much, keep it.
What?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So, and then, yeah, crazy, right? And then, so then this past summer, I found a third one and bought it. So I have three.
You have three of those?
Yeah, I have three of them. I have the largest AN-10 collection in the world.
So what is it? What is it about that particular guitar? Does it just go back to the frequency? Like,
it's a cello. Yeah. It sounds like a cello.
Oh,
so
I love the shape of the guitar. Oh, that's beautiful.
It sounds like I can't make any other guitars sound like this. But it sounds like, to me, it sounds like a cello. It's
oh,
right.
Oh, I love the tone of that.
Yeah, and I can't get any other guitar to sound like that.
Oh, man. It's got a... Oh.
Right?
Dude, that first of all, that little piece that you played was beautiful, first of all.
Thank you.
That was amazing. Was that an original? Or
yeah.
That like, yeah. Oh, man.
It's a whole song.
That's so I really love that. It's got like a really balanced tone.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's not too much low.
Right.
You know, it's not so much rumbly low end. And it's got a nice like mixture of mid and highs. Like that's a really balanced sound, especially coming from a dreadnought because they're usually boomy.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Huh. And so I have three of those. And then I have a 12 string. I love 12 string, man.
I've never played a 12 string.
when we get together,
I'm
going to play the 12 string. It's work. It's a lot of work.
It's big
on your hand.
Yeah, I'm afraid of it because it's just like, do you finger pick a 12 string? Do you strum it?
I do them both.
If you
finger pick a 12 string, sounds beautiful.
Really?
And so then I had one of those, and then a friend of mine restored a 12 string and gave it to me.
Mm.
And so I have five guitars, and then my daughter's boyfriend is trying to win her back. So he brought a guitar over and he left it at the house.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, he still, you know, he comes and goes. But so I have like a six guitar and it's a left-handed guitar.
Oh.
And so I tried playing it and I can't. It doesn't work, man. But
oh man.
And then I went down this. So your guitars come pre-amped, right? Like there's pickups in them.
Yeah.
So these don't.
Yeah, I noticed cuz you have the what is it called? The magnetic, the strip over the sound hole. Yeah.
So, for like 3 years, I'm sweating out, like, because I'm going to start playing out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, I got to put a pickup in here. Because you can't mic a guitar playing out.
No, you can't.
And I'm like, oh God, I can't deal with this. I call Taylor Guitars. I'm like, what do I do? Because I know they're famous for their pickups. And I research after research after research. So finally, I'm just like, I buy one. I'm just like, I'm just going to do it. It's the only time I've ever yelled at my daughter. So, and I'm like, I can't have anybody else install it either. Because if it gets messed up, it has to be me that messed it up.
Yes.
So I take a round file and for 3 hours, I'm drilling a hole in the thing with a file. My daughter comes and she goes, hey, Dad, what are you doing? Shut the fuck up! Since then, I've relaxed, and now I have a friend Joe that does it. But, man, do you work on your guitars?
I do. You know, mostly, like, you know, I might change the strings. You know, I might adjust the neck, but nothing beyond that.
Right.
I'll just take it to there's a local music store not far from me, and there's a luthier in town that I've just started using who actually fixed the belt rash on that.
Oh, nice.
Sorry, yeah. So I don't do too much, but just keeping the fretboard clean, like that kind of stuff.
I don't. I'm bad at that. Do you worry about humidity?
Yes, I do.
I should. Right?
That's why I didn't put it back, but I got these D'Addario bag things.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So what it does is it actually maintains the humidity, it maintains the level of humidity within the guitar so that it's balanced. It's not too dry. There's not too much moisture.
Do I need to be doing that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Just, it's super simple. I got it on Amazon. I forget how much it was, but there's three bags. This goes into the strings and then there's one at the headstock.
Oh, wow.
And as long as you keep the case closed, it will keep that environment within the case like at an optimal.
Oh, that's cool.
Humidity level, and right. That way you don't have to worry about like the neck getting all crazy and stuff. But I wanted to ask you with the pickup because, like, for me, this guitar sounds way different acoustically than when I plug it in. Yeah. So pickups for me, like, they are extremely important because I'm always gigging, and I want the pickup to, as best as possible, reflect the sound of the guitar. So when you were looking for that pickup, did you stress out about that?
Completely stressed out about that. It drove me crazy because I couldn't duplicate. You can't replicate that. I found what I wound up doing is like, so what kind of amp do you play out of?
I have a little Fishman Laubach that I typically play out.
Those are good.
Which is beautiful. I mean, it's the only thing I found that can come close.
Those are good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had one of those, and then I got a it's called a Fender 100, and it's just for, and
I know those.
Okay. And like that combination got me as close as I possibly could, but my problem when, like, for your guitars, the pickups inside the body.
Yes.
So you get to hear what's going on inside the guitar.
Yes.
With these pickups, the pickup, you're only catching a sound coming out of the guitar.
Right.
So the only one that came close was this one because it has a microphone that goes in the guitar too. So you get to hear.
Body.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you get to hear what's going on. But I fixated for years.
Yeah.
Man. It was not good.
Yeah. Because it's got to be right. Because otherwise, like, it's like.
It,
you don't want to play it. You can't play it out. Like, you just have to play it acoustically.
And you also can't practice with it because what you're playing in practice sounds so different and you're so frustrated.
Yes.
I'm like, dude, this sounds like. Do you, when you decided to gig full time, what'd your wife say?
You know what? She was actually on board with it because when she met me, like, she knew that I was, you know, musical. I came from that pedigree.
Okay.
So it wasn't like I was an accountant and then I was going to do a 360 and just become a musician. So, like, I was already, like, it was already in my life. My family is very musical. Like, a lot of my friends are very musical. So even though I didn't do it for 10 years, you know, there was still music sort of happening. So when I told her full time, we sort of eased into it. Like, I started part time and, you know, and I started going to open mics and, you know, and I'd be like, all right, bye, babe. I'm going out on a Tuesday night to an open mic to see if I, you know, maybe they'll take me and like take me on. And that's actually how it started. So,
wow.
But she's always been supportive of my musical journey because she knows that, like, it's one of the few things in life outside of my kids and obviously her and whatever and my family. It's one of the few things that, like, lights me up. It's one of the few things that, like, you know, so to take that away is like,
Right. Why be with me if you're going to take that? No, I'm with you.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the money you make playing out?
You know what? I my philosophy is, and someone told me this earlier on, and someone reminded me of this. They always say, know your worth. Know your worth. So, and whenever I talk about the money piece, because obviously, like, that's huge. If you want to do it full time, like, that's, you have to deal with that. And I have a floor that, like, you know, unless I'm getting X amount of dollars, like, it just doesn't make sense for me to do. Now, I am fortunate enough to be at the point in my career where, like, I'll typically get referrals and callbacks, and
that's great,
you know, and I typically play restaurants where they've already paid me a certain price, and so it works. But do I think musicians are underpaid? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, I think just in general, like, you know, there's this notion that people should be playing music for free, and while I think that's true to some extent, especially if it's for a cause like the Lifted Project, or I also volunteer for Musicians on Call. I was gonna ask about that. Yes. I think it's totally acceptable, but I that's my thing.
The business model makes me crazy.
Yes.
Especially when a restaurant or bar asks you, how many people are you gonna bring?
Oh my God.
My answer to that is, I will bring people to the bar if you pay me a business development consultant fee.
I love that answer.
I'm happy to do that.
I love that.
You pay me to play music, then. But if you're asking me to do marketing for you, then pay what you would pay a consultant.
Right.
Because that's not my job.
It's not.
Yeah.
Either that or, you know, if you want to share some of the alcohol sales with me.
Right, yeah.
Right, because the people that I'm coming in with, I'm sure they're going to consume your food and your alcohol. Yep. Right. So
yeah, give me a percentage then. And then the other problem with the business model is it's so, they're going to judge you by the size of the audience that you bring in.
Yes.
But that's so dependent on so many other factors. So some guy eats a bad hamburger and gets food poisoning. Dude, I don't care how good I am.
Right.
He's not coming back.
He's not coming.
Yeah. Right. And you know, you got a rude bartender. I don't care how good I am. It's just so not in my control.
Yes.
And the other thing is, you play out and probably, you know, you play out on a weekend. Mm-hmm. Like, you play out full time, but most play out on a weekend. You play out on a weekend. People are coming. It's the height of their week. Like, you work all week to be able to go
absolutely
and let loose and listen and blah, 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 right? And they're coming to hear live music because you can get a hamburger anywhere.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So coming to hear the live music and have that experience. Of all the players in that game,
mm-hmm.
waiter, chef, owner,
mm-hmm.
you're the most important and you're paid the least.
Yes.
Makes me
100%.
Makes me nuts.
100%.
The only way I can think around it is to unionize, but you can't.
Yeah.
Because open mics will kill you.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And
what's your relationship with open micing? Because I got a mixed bag with that too.
You know, I don't mind it. I love open mics in the sense that, like, open mics sort of got me in the door, and I was able to, like, sort of, I hate the word networking because it's such, like, a cliche, like.
Right.
I hate it. But
it is.
But, yeah, it's for lack of a better term, I was able to network and, you know, get to know other musicians who sort of took me under my wing and was like, hey, like, if you're interested in doing this, at least on a part-time basis, maybe reach out to these people. I can introduce you. So I love open mic for that because it sort of gets you in the door with people who have a relationship with venues in that area. What I don't like with open mics is some open mics I've gone to have been very clicky where, like, the same people sort of show up. And it's almost like a closed environment where, like, unless they know you, you know, and of course, like, they put it out, like, come to the open mic, everybody's welcome, all levels. But then when you get there, it's a different story. And it's just like, you know, this person knows this person. And maybe, you know, the same people show up. There's a limited number of slots.
Right.
If you show up late, then there's no time for you, and it's just, you know, I've gone to an open mic where I travel for like an hour and didn't play.
That's frustrating,
right?
That's frustrating.
And it's just like,
yeah, that's not cool,
right?
I used to have a big problem with open mics because uh-huh. My problem was if you start giving what you do away for free, it mm-hmm. is very hard to get paid for it.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
and you know, and like you know what stock photography is. You license a photo for your ad. Like you used to have to, if you had an ad and you wanted a tiger, you used to have to hire somebody to go to Africa and shoot it. Mm-hmm. Now you don't have to. Now you just license one for a buck. But then stock photography started giving away license free, royalty free photography.
Yes.
Now there's no stock photography business anymore right. because you gave it away for free. So I'm like, right. on the one hand, but on the other hand, it so much of, I mean, you know this, but mm-hmm. if you're listening, so much of gigging out is what you do in between the songs.
Yes.
And learning how to work a crowd yes. and learning how to respond and knowing where the room is going. And
yes.
that you can't do that alone. You can't right. practice. You need a place to practice
right.
that. And so I think open mic served that purpose. So I'm willing to
yes.
trade that off.
Yeah, it does because – and it also gives you the opportunity to practice – maybe a new song or a new cover that, you know, maybe you're not sure is going to go the way you want it to in a gigging situation.
Right.
But I feel you on that, like open mics in that they devalue.
Yeah.
The what we do.
Right.
Because it's just like, you know, because now like the bar who's hosting it, like they get live music that they're not paying anybody for. Yep. Right. And the patrons, they get to enjoy live music. Now, granted, like that music might vary,
you know, in terms of,
you know, like, and I'm not one of those people who's like, I'm not one of those, you know, snobby people who's like, oh, this guy's great. You know, it is what it is. Like, if the creation and making music makes you a better person, go for it.
Yeah.
You know, but again, like, if you are going to pay a musician to, you know, and they have a reputation, then you know you're going to get a quality or right. a particular type of product
right.
versus like an open mic.
Yeah. And also, like, I think I just the diversity of genre and stuff, you're going to lose people with an open mic. Like, yes. somebody comes to hear a country singer and then, you know, somebody else comes up and does a different genre. It,
right.
Like, not everybody likes every style, so you right. risk losing the room so much. Whereas if yes. you have, you know, but I do. Do you work on what you do in between songs?
Like the stage banter?
Yeah.
I do, but I literally work on it on stage. Like,
but what's the only place you can?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just like, and sometimes like I like to think I'm a comedian, but I'm not. And sometimes my jokes or what I think are jokes, they just fall flat. And nobody laughs in the room.
Yep.
You know, which makes for an awkward situation. But it's just like, all right, here's the next song.
I have a different problem. I got two problems, but uh-huh. you're good. Maybe you can solve them.
Mm-hmm.
One problem is, like, all my originals are weepy. Like,
not a bad thing.
The goal, it is when you're, like, playing out and
well, people want to. Well, I guess if you're in a rowdy bar, I guess. Or, like, yeah, yeah, no, like a high energy.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, like, I play a song about my wife's cancer and everybody cries and I'm like,
that's awesome though.
It is, but then everybody's looking around like, well, wait, did I come out Friday night to cry? No. So my solution was, all right, I'm going to start playing covers.
Okay.
So I started playing covers. But two of the songs that I went down this Goo Goo Dolls rabbit hole this summer. And
I love it.
Oh, dude. Most of my stuff's arpeggio because it's hard to make somebody cry strong. And so most of it's arpeggio. So I started playing these songs. And I got into this thing where I would build like a big guitar riff.
Uh-huh.
And then let it hang out and then go back to finger picking.
Yeah. Oh,
so
that's, I love that dynamic.
It's cool, but what happens is people start applauding after you peak the thing and you're not done with the song. So I'm screwed there too, man. I'm like,
like, wait, I'm not done. Don't clap yet. Don't clap yet.
Right. But I mean, I get why.
Yeah.
But. And I have like three songs that I do that are like that where people just start clapping and I just have to jump on me.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's bad, man. But you know Johnny Resnick, the lead singer for the Goo Goo Dolls?
Yes.
You know his story?
I don't know his story.
Dude, he's the rhythm guitarist for the
uh-huh,
band,
uh-huh.
but he can't play guitar. So what he does is he can only play with like two fingers.
Uh-huh.
So what he does is he has a different guitar for every song, and they're all in different tunings. So he'll do a concert and he'll have like 15 different guitars.
That's insane.
Right?
But that's like ingenious though.
Yeah. Right? I think it's genius
like, that's
too.
That's like a fantastic way around it, and you can have a bunch of different guitars.
Right, and you can buy a guitar. but I heard an interview though, and it's like, but I drive my luthier crazy because they're all tuned different, so the necks are twisting. You gotta like every day adjust neck. And yeah, but like if he comes on and plays slide for you and then say, okay, can you play name? He's like, I didn't bring the name guitar. I can't.
That's wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. That's kinda like harp. You play harmonica, yeah. Like you gotta have a bunch of different tunes.
Right, right.
Kind of, sort of, but
it is.
But that's way cooler, though.
Do you do alternate tunings?
I try. I try to experiment, but not really.
Me either.
Yeah, I like the standard.
There's so much I can do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why mess around with it?
Right. I mean, I like to play around with different chords, obviously, and yeah, but like the standard tuning is fine, fantastic for me.
And do you get into like different voicings of chords, or do you care about that?
I do get into different voicings of chords, and it really just depends on, I really get into it when I do covers, like, you know, cause I call my covers, I call them original covers.
Right.
Because, you know, cause I don't do them the original way.
Right.
And, so I'll do like different voicings just to kind of give the song a different like feel and vibe. And yeah.
Yeah.
I do.
I have a buddy who does covers, and the way he learns it is I learn the chords, and then I never listen to the song again, so that it's not – so that I put myself on it instead of
– Yes.
Yeah.
100%. And the way I did it when I was learning guitar, and I was telling this story. I was at – I got to play at the world-famed Daryl's house.
Yeah.
Yesterday? No, Sunday. Today's Tuesday, right?
Tuesday, yeah.
Yeah, so Sunday I was there, and I was telling the story on stage – when I started playing and learning guitar, I only knew like 3-4 chords.
Right.
Tops on a good day.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of the songs that I was learning, they might have either had more than that, or they might have had chords that I didn't know, like, you know, fancy like jazzy bluesy chords. So I just took the chords that I knew
and made it work.
And made it work, yeah.
Yep. Yep.
So, you know, so now and as a result, like you have like, you know, I do like a version of Country Roads that sounds completely different when I first start playing it, and it's only when I start singing the lyrics that you're like, oh, wait a minute, that's Country Roads.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, you know, it's, and a lot of people have come up to me and say, man, like it's almost like hearing a familiar song but for the first time again.
Right.
Yeah. Nice. which is
that's
nice.
That's great experience.
Yeah, that's nice.
You ever write instrumentals?
I do. I don't write a whole lot of instrumentals, but because I prefer to finger pick a guitar.
Yeah, man.
I love the nuance and the tone and like the individual notes that come from, especially like when you experiment with different woods and stuff like that little piece that you played, like that is, I'll take that any day over. I'm not saying strum it. Like I'm not downing people who strum, cause I also strum as well, but like. Finger-picked guitar is like it's fantastic.
It's perfect.
Oh,
it's like, perfect.
Yeah, I love it.
Because you get to hear two melodies at the same time.
Yes.
As opposed to when you're strumming, it's accompaniment.
You're right.
When you're doing arpeggio, it's two different melodies at the same time. Yes.
I mean, it's, you know, and you not only do you get the note, but you also get the overtones of the note as well. And it's just a beautiful. So I try to write some. I don't do a ton of it, but I do try to write some instrumental stuff just because I love the way it sounds.
I think every singer songwriter on a guitar should try to write some instrumental stuff because it just makes you a better player.
Yes,
it just makes you a better player.
100%.
Because you can't cheat.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Like
right.
My big vocal cheat is I'll growl.
Yes.
My voice
yeah.
But it's a cheat. Yeah. Like, but you can't do that if you're blah, blah, blah,
right.
Blah, blah, blah,
right. Right. Like you got to get it right. Like,
yeah.
You got to get it. Like, you know, there was this piece that I had to learn. It's a song by Eva Cassidy called Songbird. I just did a wedding on Saturday night, and there's an instrumental piece at the beginning. Like there's just this little beautiful guitar riff.
Right.
And, you know, and I was excited about it because it's like, oh man, like this could totally be a completely instrumental piece.
Yeah.
You know, without the lyrics, because it's just written so beautifully, and the instrumental was just like,
My big influence coming up was James Taylor. I worship James Taylor. The thing I love about James Taylor, but he destroyed me. I'll tell you why.
Mm.
But
yeah, you got to tell me about that. What?
So, but the thing I love about James Taylor is it's all arpeggio.
Mm.
And, well, most, 98% of it is arpeggio. And he knows how to let the guitar do some work.
Yes.
Like most players when they're playing don't. They're on to the next note so fast that you don't let the guitar do any work. And,
yes.
And like you're talking about overtones, and you don't get that because you're already – that's why I don't like strumming.
Yes.
You're on to the next.
You're on to the next,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, so I worked up this whole set an evening with James Taylor, and I'm going around playing it.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and so to do that, though – like when you cover James Taylor, they want to hear you sing like this. They don't want to hear you sing like,
yeah,
right?
Yes.
So I'm using that voice. I did it for so long that I forgot, like – what I sounded like.
Oh,
and
no.
So when I got back to writing, everything sounded like James,
like Taylor. James
Taylor. Yeah. That was bad. That was bad.
Yeah.
But
did you get, so how'd you like, so are you, do you still have that issue or are you back to like?
No, now I can sing like
you
me.
You can sing like
Because I got the best singing lesson. It was one sentence.
Uh-huh.
My friend shared, told it to me. I'll never forget, and she changed my life. She goes, I go, because she teaches singing, so I had her on. So I'm like, give me a singing lesson, but one sentence.
Uh-huh.
And she said, sing like you talk.
Oh.
Yeah. And I was like, okay. Like,
okay.
Use your speaking voice.
Yeah.
Don't try to, you know, don't be afraid. Just do use your, and it totally changed everything.
Huh. That's.
You ever take lessons?
Not really. I mean, I.
You don't need them, man.
Thank you.
I wouldn't take lessons if I was you either.
No, thank you. No. Other than like, you know, like in school, I was in different choirs.
Yeah.
And I had like formal training in that way, but not necessarily private lessons. I did take, that's not to say that, like I've always told my wife and anybody who quite frankly listened to me talk about music, that I've always said that like, if I make it like superstardom or whatever, and I'm like out playing, like I would love to take vocal lessons, but not necessarily for them to teach me how to sing, although I'd be open to that, but really to teach me how to rest my voice.
Yeah.
Because I find that, especially like when I'm doing like these marathon gigs, that after, you know, an hour or whatever it is, like I start to feel it. So
yeah.
So really it's like, how do I sing without, you know, putting so much strain on my voice?
Right.
Yeah. You know, so that's really like what I'm interested in. Like,
that makes
like,
sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
How are your hands holding up?
I mean, they're wrecked, man. My fingertips are just like, I love it. It's a rite of passage.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
It's
yeah,
like
yeah.
a rite of passage.
I'm not practicing enough if I can't take a thumbtack and put it in my finger.
Yes.
And not feel it.
And not feel it. Yeah, absolutely. And like,
and you can pick up hot things and bounce them on your fingertips.
Yes.
And everybody's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't feel
anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Do they hurt though? Do your hands hurt?
They only hurt like if I, cause sometimes I'm a maniac and sometimes I might play for 2 hours straight and then
right.
at the end, you know, it might hurt, but like,
right.
I can go an hour, maybe an hour and a half and I'll be okay.
Right. Yeah.
How about you? Like you.
Well, I found this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a hyper ice ball. And it's a vibrating ball. It's about
uh-huh.
like this big.
Yeah.
And it just vibrates. And you, like athletes use it for muscle, you know, for muscle treatment. But I use it on my hands.
Uh-huh.
You give it like 3 minutes and all of a sudden you like.
Really?
Your hands are reborn. Yeah. So if I'm like playing like a long time, I'll do like you. Like I can get through like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
So I get through an hour and a half and I just use the ball for like
really?
A minute and they're back to. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'll send you a link
yeah,
to it.
Please do.
Yeah.
Because like that's awesome.
Yeah.
Like do you ever use. You ever see the advertisements for the singing straw? Have you ever seen
No.
that? It looks like a straw, but you're supposed to, I guess you blow into it and it's supposed to like help strengthen your vocal cords.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's called a singing straw. I've asked like a whole bunch of people about the singing straw and I haven't come across anybody who uses it yet, but it's recently come up on my Instagram feed.
Uh-oh.
And I always see like this woman using the singing straw. She's like, it's the best. And she sings the praises.
Right.
But I can't find anybody who uses it.
So. I never even heard of it.
Yeah, it's called a singing straw.
All right.
I'll send you a link to
okay,
it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you do another song?
Of course. Of course.
What do you want to do?
So I'm going to do another, actually, maybe I should do like one of those original covers that I was.
If you do that, but then we can't go on Spotify.
It's
totally up to you where you want to be. I do better on Mixcloud anyway. So
no, it's okay. I'll do one of my originals. This is
okay.
off of my an album I just released. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say just released. I released it last September. The anniversary of the release was Sunday. So,
oh wow,
yeah, it's called Patchwork. It's 11 songs, and this song is called Charming, which is based on. You ever see Shrek the movie?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, so it's basically it's based on that. You know how Shrek he's sort of a prince, but he's like he's not really. He just wants to be left alone,
right?
And so I wrote this song with the premise that, like, all right, this is written from Shrek's point of view, where he wants to be left alone, and in order to be left alone, he's made a deal with like the king that he's got to save his he's got to save the princess, which is the king's princess,
right,
from like this dragon. And then after that, like, he won't send out the townspeople with the fire and the pitchforks or whatever to bother Shrek. So,
what a cool premise.
Yeah, yeah. So this is written from a prince's point of view, but, like, very practical, I guess. Here we go. As the wind passes over my face and my horse is leaning into a gate, I journey deep into the forest, hoping I'm the first one to the key. I heard there's a beautiful princess, but deep in a perpetual steep, I'm hoping I can find my way in without ever using a key. But I heard that a kiss was poison, but no one dares to try for me. I'm hoping that when she wakes up, I'm hoping she don't think me creep. My destination's off in the distance, but feeling things that I never felt. But all I wanna do is back out. There's a dragon and it's angry as hell. I'm used to angry mobs and pitchforks and torches that light up the sky. Coming face to face with a dragon means I leave it to some other guy. But I heard that a kiss was poison, but no one dares to try but me. I'm hoping that when she wakes up, I'm hoping she don't think me a creep. A journey back into the forest, I don't give it another thought. If you ever needed a hero, but try that other guy with your phone. But I heard that a kiss was poison, but no one has to try for me. I'm hoping that when she wakes up, I'm hoping she don't think me a creep. So I journey back into the forest, I don't give it another thought. And if you ever needed a hero, but try that other guy with your phone. I'd be in my house all alone, wishing I had the strength to go on.
Man,
thank you.
That is so good.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You fit that guitar. That's nice.
Thank you.
You get great sound out of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's. I love it because it's like tiny. It's small. I can like curl up with it. Yeah. I can almost like embrace it.
Yeah.
And play.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
No, that's beautiful, man.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
What percentage when you play out? What percentage is performative versus musical?
When you say performative, you mean
like you're worrying about how you look. You're moving your body.
I would say performative,
making yourself interesting to look at instead of listening to.
I would say performative. Embarrassingly, it's probably pretty low. I would say it's probably like 30%.
Yeah, that's about me too.
Yeah, you know what it is, because unless I am playing with a band, and sometimes I occasionally do that a few times a year. Unless I'm playing with a band, if I'm just solo on a guitar, I am typically in a place where I'm expected to sort of be background music.
Right.
But I think, and we talked about this before we started, I wear these bow ties.
Yeah.
That, first of all, I love, because in my area, like, nobody wears bow ties. And I think just in general, I think, like, if you took 100 men, like, you might find two.
Two.
That you run up against who wears bow ties.
Right.
So I think it adds like a little bit of a visual appeal. Yep. Like when I show up, especially I'm wearing like the suspenders as well. So, yeah. But it's also a way that people remember me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's just like.
How much marketing do you do now?
Again, that's embarrassingly low.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Well, you drove up here. That was good.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go. That's marketing.
That's yeah. You know what it is? I do a lot of. I try to do a lot of word of mouth. Like so, because I am gigging a lot. Like I do that a lot. I'll in between songs, visit my website jarriscook.com. Right. Go to my social media. I do a lot of social media, like heavy social media posts. Like,
yeah.
You know, I might. Post a story, you know, it might not be musical related, you know, but always like if I have a ticketed show coming up, I'll always jump on and be like, hey, I got a show coming up.
Yep.
By the way, here's my son doing something crazy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah.
But yeah. So, but you know, I probably should. And then that's one of these things that I keep hearing from experts, you know, that we should be marketing more often. And I totally get that.
It's hard though. Like, the future for singer-songwriters, I think, is really good,
mm-hmm.
but I think we're in a really bad space.
Yeah.
I think we're in a really bad space because right now so much music is available so easily that it's hard to break through.
It is.
And I mean, especially with original music. Yeah. It's like really hard to break through.
It is.
That's the bad part. The good part is the robots are coming.
Yeah,
and they're going to write songs. And the only place where you're going to be able to watch people watch music that somebody wrote is a singer songwriter live.
Yeah.
So I think that will be I think that will become more of a singular event.
Yes.
And we'll be okay in the end, but right now it sucks.
Yeah. I mean, I can't. And I'm sure there is a future where, like, you know, I don't know if we have holograms or something where, like, people are replacing singer-songwriters. But, like, that's hard to duplicate in a live set.
Right.
Like, somebody who is
especially if you're working a crowd.
Right,
like,
right.
That's really hard. Yeah, like, you got a ChatGPT that looks
right.
like...
looks right, like Jarris and, right, and, right, right. With, like, you know, and he's all glitchy
because
yep. of the hologram.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, I'm sorry. I can't, like, oh, what was that? Max Headroom? Is that Max Headroom?
Max Headroom.
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah. Do you write other than music?
Occasionally. I've tried to do poems and stuff, you know.
Right.
Like, if that's what you mean.
Yeah. Or not, anything long form, like a book? Or
not really. I mean, I've always wanted to, but. Writing for me, it comes in fits and starts.
Yeah.
And one of the greatest compliments my wife has ever paid to me is she's like, you're a better writer than me, which I was like, what?
Oh.
Did you say that? I don't know if she still believes that because she said it years
she
ago.
She said it once.
Yeah, she said it once, yeah.
At
yeah.
one point, you were a better writer than her.
At one point, I was a better, or so she thought.
Right.
But writing has always comes in fits and starts, and it doesn't come easy for me.
Right.
Because I'm one of those writers that, like, the line has to be just right.
Yeah.
Like, before I can move on. Like, I have to, like, the cadence of the words, like, they have to fit together. I have to find the right descriptive words. I like to stay away from cliche words.
Yep.
So, like, it has to be just right. And I've been a part of these writing exercises where they say, like, you know, take 5 minutes and just write. You know, like, don't worry about pronunciation. Don't worry about grammar. Yep. You just write for 5 minutes nonstop. And apparently, if you do that every day, like, it becomes better. And I believe it. I
do this thing called the morning pages.
Uh-huh.
It's from this book called The Artist's Way. And what you do is, and it's so good for your head. Forget your songwriting. It's uh-huh. so good for your head. You get up, first thing you do,
uh-huh.
before you drink a coffee.
Before
or as
coffee.
You're, or
oh.
as you're
okay,
drinking
okay,
your coffee.
Okay, I'm on board
but it's
now.
The first thing you got to do. 300 pages can be whatever.
Really?
Can be. You can write the word doorknob. But it's 300 pages. But what it does is, and you don't show anybody. It can be your journal. It can be, but you just got to do 300 pages.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't matter what's in it. But what that does is, over time, like when you start your day, you're typically receiving, right? You're getting the news. You're getting your day.
Right.
What do I look like? Blah, blah, blah. You're receiving. What this does is it starts your brain put out in output
huh.
from the get. So then when you sit down to try to write. you're not starting from scratch for that day. You've already
flushed out your system.
Right,
so
right.
To speak.
And you already got your brain used to making something. And it doesn't take long. It takes like 7 minutes or whatever. But it really does work.
3 pages.
Huh? Yeah, just 3 handwritten pages.
I'm going to try that.
My house is so littered with composition notebooks, it would scare you. I look like a composition notebook hoarder.
Well, first of all, the fact that you are handwriting this
makes
that,
a big difference.
Yeah, that's huge because people don't write anymore at
if
all,
you,
really.
Do you handwrite your lyrics or do you...
It's funny because I have an iPad, but it's got like the Apple Pen.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can handwrite on it. Yeah. But it's not like pen to paper.
Right, but it's
still writing, yeah.
I think that's helpful because if you type, I can type. You type so fast that you miss some thinking. Mm. When you're handwriting, you've got time to think about what's coming next, and you've got time to think about what you're writing. So just I always say, like, I think in handwriting speed. I don't think in typing speed. So I find it really helps.
Do you find that helps you with your – when you sit down to write? So much.
And then I have this other test that I do for – which is part of why I love your music.
Oh, thank you.
Because I put your music to my test, and it passed so well. I don't like songs where I can predict the next line.
Oh, I passed it. That was awesome.
I can't predict any of your next lines. But to me, rhyme night and light again in a song, and I'm out. It's like, do the work, right? Do the work, man.
Yes.
So
yes.
I don't like that where I can predict.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where when I was telling you, like, writing, it comes difficult for me because I like to stay away from the cliches.
Yeah.
Of night and the light.
Yeah.
You know, like the typical stuff that you're going
to love make. And of yeah, or yeah. love and above.
Yeah, do, love
do,
and above.
Don't do that ever to me ever again. I will leave you if you rhyme love and above again.
Just like, don't do it. Just stay away from that.
Stay away, man. Yeah. You work out?
I do. I work out pretty regularly.
It's good.
Oh. How about you?
Dude, yeah, I'm religious about it.
Yeah.
But it's not like I do it for mental health too. Mm-hmm. But
Good. It's good for mental health. It's good. And I didn't know. And that's something that I just recently learned within the past, I would say, 2 or 3 years. Because I've only been working out regularly for maybe 2 or 3 years at this point. But I didn't realize like the mental health benefits.
Oh, it's from vital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I was just like, oh, that's a nice little like.
Well, they have new studies coming out now that exercise releases. I was listening to this scientist being interviewed, and he's talking about mood stabilizing drugs and the chemicals they release, and so the guy's like, you know, first pharmacology, second thing that releases the most of those chemicals is music.
Oh,
and the third thing is exercise. So he's like, if you want to get off music and exercise,
oh man, it just so happens we both love both.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
like, we both we're already ahead of the game.
We tripped over it.
I am in. I can honestly say that I am probably in the best shape of my life since high school.
Yeah.
Because and I remember it like it was yesterday. In 2021, I was 200 and maybe 25 pounds. I'm 170 pounds now.
We are so alike. I dropped 50 2 years ago.
Did you?
Yeah. We are so alike. That's crazy.
And it's a huge difference, right? Just feel better in your
move.
Body. Like, you're right. You can move. Like, you got more mobility.
Yep.
Like, your legs feel lighter. Like, you just feel better.
How'd you do it?
I started running a lot initially.
Good.
My goal was I was just going to do a mile a day, whether it was walking or running or a combination of both. And then I gradually increased the mileage. And then at some point, running just because that was my only form of exercise. I was like, I got to do something else.
Right.
So I started strength training and then sort of mixing it up. So, I do, you know, I'm typically in the gym 4 to 5 days a week.
Yes, sir.
And I'll either do a combination like cardio. It'll either be running or biking. Sometimes I'll also do rowing as well, and always strength training.
Yeah.
Always. Yeah.
Do you care what you eat? Are you...
Yeah, no, I very much so.
Me too. That's so crazy. Yeah,
very much so.
I am eating so clean now.
Yeah,
that like if I stray off the path like this much, I feel it.
Yeah. Oh, I just last night because we celebrated my son's birthday. We had like a little birthday sort of dinner at the house, and of course, like my wife's like, "Well, what do you want for dinner?" And he's like, "Chinese food." I'm like, "Oh,
can't do it." Yep.
Well, I mean, I did do it, but I was like, and I'm
you're
on
a good
the
dad.
I'm on the phone with my wife, and I'm like, babe, like, what am I gonna have at the Chinese food place? So I ended up getting like brown rice,
okay,
you know, which is okay, and then I got like General Tso's chicken, but it comes with like steamed broccoli,
right?
So I had the brown rice, the steamed broccoli, and some of the chicken,
okay,
and, you know, so. It wasn't too bad, but I really like the when I typically get Chinese food, chicken and broccoli, but it's got all like the MSG and the brown
and
sauce.
You feel it, don't you?
Oh my, I feel bloated and just like,
man.
I'm just like, so, yeah, but very much so.
We both must be very difficult to live with.
You know what? It's funny because
it's all music and healthy food.
It's music and healthy food, but you know, it's funny because we recently had to check my doctor, he retired recently, so we recently changed doctors, and I want to say within the past 2 years. And the story behind why I picked the doctor we go to is because, and my wife, she's like, "Are you kidding me? Like, this is why you chose this doctor?" Is because she comes from a musical family.
I can respect that.
Yeah, like her husband plays guitar. Her son is like in the music industry. So I was like, oh. Perfect choice. Like, I don't care how good of a doctor she is.
Right.
Like, she comes from music, so let's go.
Beautiful, man.
Yeah.
So. Will you play us out of here? Because I got to get you out
of course,
here.
Of course, yes.
Wait, before, what, you want to pitch anything?
Oh, so I will be, well, I don't know, how soon is this coming out?
I can get it out tomorrow.
Tomorrow. I got a show. I do have a show tomorrow, but it might not be. Well, I'll be in, and it might be a little far from, for
well, I can wait, too. Oh, go ahead.
The locals, but I'll be in Nashville for the first time on October 12th.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. I am super excited about it. I'm performing with the Black Opry. They're this really awesome organization. They basically take Black Americana artists and they put us in spaces and places that we normally wouldn't be able to play in.
Right.
Not just that or underrepresented in.
Right.
So... be in Nashville October 12th. The venue is called Studio Mama Supper Club.
Cool.
Studio Mama Supper Club. And it's like a studio / restaurant where you go. It's going to be a writers in the round sort of format. I'll be on stage with four other singer-songwriter individuals. And then we'll do like a song swap. So I'll sing a song and they'll sing a song.
Sounds cool, man.
Yeah. And it's cool because, you know, I don't get... as being a full-time musician, I don't get to see a lot of live music.
Right.
I'm sure you experienced the same thing.
Yep.
So that's like the musician's curse.
What you need to do is start a podcast so you can just have people come
and
play for you.
And play for me. Yeah. I should.
Yeah.
I should.
It works out.
Yeah.
And what's the website?
JerrisCook.com. So that's JeirisCook.com.
Beautiful, man.
All my stuff there.
And you'll play us out of here?
I'm going
to play
it.
It was so cool to have you in here.
Dude, thank
Kindred
you so
spirit,
much.
Man.
Yeah, I know, man. Like, nice. We got so much in common.
Yeah.
Oh.
Beautiful, man. What are you going to play?
I'm probably going to end with an original tune that I really love to play. And this one is called Date Night. And I wrote this song a couple years back. And it's sort of a dedication to my wife and how we sort of like, I mean, we do the typical date night thing. Like we'll go out and have dinner or a movie, but sometimes we like to stay in. So this is kind of like a reflective song.
Cool.
Like how we spend date night. Here we go.
Beautiful.
Let's play some records and drink some wine. Put on your favorite sweats. I've got mine. It's been a long week, but I count myself lucky, 'cause I got the likes of you waiting on me, on you, baby. Come on in, let's get down tonight, but let's do the day night. Waiting
on you, baby. Jump on in, sit down, the vibe is nice, but let's do the day night thing. We step out and I'm best dressed. I got us a reservation at a fancy restaurant at a secret location. Your stresses fall away. Forget about the troubles of the day. Just relax and enjoy this time away. Hey, on you, lady. But jump on in, sit down, the vibe is nice. But let's do the day night waiting on you, baby. Jump on in, sit down, the vibe is nice. But let's do the day night thing. Ooh, let's go, but let's go, babe. Ooh, but let's toast, but let's toast it up. Yeah. Cause everything is fine, baby, grab your drink and let's unwind on you, baby. But jump on in, sit down, the vibe is nice. But let's do the day night waiting on you, baby. But jump on in, sit down, the vibe is nice. But let's do the day night thing. But jump on in, sit down, the vibe is nice. But let's do the day night thing.
So good, man.
Thank you so much.
So
thank
good.
You. John, thank you so much.
No, thank you for coming, man. Seriously. You got to come back.
Absolutely.
And
we're doing that the Lifted
project. Yes, 100%. Yes. Beautiful, man. Awesome. Yeah, works. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was fun.
That was awesome, man.
Oh, yeah?
Dude, that was awesome.
Oh, seriously, good. Man. Good, man. I'm so glad. I had a blast. Oh, good. I'm so glad.
Thank you so much. You're so talented. Thank you, man. So are you, man. Like, wow. I don't sound like you when I play guitar. Party trick.